Robert here has gone back to sit next to a building. You're holding up a sign, no sleep, no peace?
Yes, because I'm not moving.
You move back to sit next to the... You're where you may be arrested?
Yeah, it's all right. As long as it's good like for the homeless population.
Can't say that one way or the other. It's a matter of how you feel about it, I think.
Me? Yeah, like as long as it's good for the homeless population, it's probably not going to be good because they look down on us. They look down on us like we're fucking scum.
Well, I understand why you're doing this, because you feel you're asserting your rights here, but, you know, you should make up your mind. I'm not sure what I would do as a police officer in this situation. I don't think it's reasonable to think there's any public problem here. They don't have to respond to this if they don't want to.
No, actually, we're not doing anything wrong, pretty much. We're just sitting here. We're not fucking killing anybody. We're not doing any crimes.
We're
bothering anybody else, pretty much.
Well, what's the name of the other fellow who's... He's getting a ticket.
No.
Right.
But, like, we're not doing anything else. Can't they be doing something better? Isn't somebody else getting stabbed or shot? Or?
70% of
you would think so. Police force giving out tickets for sitting next to a building. That's the crime of the evening in Santa Cruz.
And, you know, when a homeless person asks me, I'll go to jail for the good of the homeless, it seems to me that that's really for the good of the homeless, I should sit down there with them.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's another edition, that was actually a replay of last Sunday's show, of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned. And that, of course, was Just Kiddin', Feel Free, Sleep on the Mayor's Lawn, from a song, 12 years old now, but still rolling along. And we have a new mayor, Mayor Cynthia Matthews, actually an old mayor. I don't know if she's as old as I am. I think she's older than I am, actually, but she's been around. She's been mayor 3 times now. This is her 3rd term, and she looks like she's going to be continuing the policies of former mayor Ryan Rotkin in waiting, Coonerty, who just was our mayor and now is simply an ordinary council member, but one of a toxic Santa Cruz City Council that retired for the winter after crowning the new 4 council members, initiating them, inaugurating them, swearing them in, and whooping it up at the Civic Center Auditorium across the street with pastries and yummies. And actually, there's an opportunity for homeless people to get a brief taste of the high life, a lot of fancy pastries and coffee and so forth, and even chat, say hello to the mayor and Vice Mayor Rotkin. That's our new vice mayor. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm actually hoping for a call-in later tonight from a professor on the East Coast around the issue of Greece and what's happening there. If you follow Amy Goodman regularly, you'd know that at least for the first time, she covered the what seems to be an increasingly tumultuous and possibly revolutionary situation over in Greece, where students, enraged by the shooting of a 15-year-old, which they call cold-blooded murder, have taken to the streets, burned government buildings, marched on the parliament, which has there's a one-vote majority separating the current government from the opposition parties. They've been shredding the safety net over there, selling out the country to private interests, and mired in corruption. And it's a pretty hairy situation here. We tend to accept police abuse. There, they don't accept it as much. This is also kind of the 30th anniversary of the overthrow of the 35th anniversary, perhaps. I think it's the 34th anniversary of the overthrow of the generals, the Greek generals, who were in power until 1974, I believe. So I hopefully will be hearing from an incoming call from this knowledgeable individual who will give us an update. I'm scanning around looking for the name of the person in question. I think actually I have it here. Let's see here. Nicholas Alexiou, I think his name is. I'm probably mispronouncing it. He is supposed to be calling around 7, and so he's a sociology prof at the Center for Byzantine and Modern Greek Studies at Queen's College in Flushing. And I've also gotten some interesting stuff, which I'll read a bit of before he comes on, from Steve Argue. He's our local socialist analyst, sometime Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, sometime homeless activist, sometimes city council candidate, and who knows, maybe he's listening in, maybe not. He's got finals this week and he's working on completing a degree, I believe. So that should be coming up soon. Also, we're going to be playing more of the Sleepout, the UN Declaration of Human Rights 60th Anniversary Memorial Sleepout. The actual anniversary was the 10th of December, but we did it on the 6th because that was the evening after the long day of programs and speeches that many 40 or 50, I don't know how many organizations, got together at the Loudoun Nelson Center and took up 3 or 4 rooms and expressed their commitment to human rights in Santa Cruz and what they were doing locally around that issue. And we talked about it too. And I'll actually, let me read my speech. I have to dig it up, but I may read it as well. But let's pick up from actually later, slightly later in the evening, from what you were hearing right before you heard the introductory song, Sleep on the Mayor's Lawn. Someone was playing a section of the last Bathrop Spears broadsides, which had the Sleepout, the beginning of the Sleepout discussions that we had. You heard several guys get tickets for simply sitting against the wall of borders, which is, of course, not obstructive, particularly when the borders is closed. pretty ridiculous stuff. But standard in Santa Cruz as a way of harassing, breaking up groups, showing police power, moving people along, breaking any kind of social solidarity with the idea that your main allegiance has to be to the authority of the police department. In Greece, they don't think about that anymore. They throw Molotov cocktails and... there hasn't been a lot of I think there's only been one death. The death that the police actually, I don't know, the authorities are actually kind of acknowledging that they believe too that the police officer shot the student in cold blood. But there haven't been other killings over there. But there have been some injuries. There have been rioting. There have been burnings and demands that the government resign. Demands that the social safety net be restored. And there's a general strike happening as well, I believe, coming up tomorrow. Anyway, we'll hear more about that. But let's go back to this, more or less where we left off on Sunday. This is an early Sunday morning, and we'll be talking about that in just a moment. But first, this from whoever's calling in. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Hello, Robert, it's Linda.
Hey, Linda, what's up?
Oh, you had that sleep out on my birthday. Remember I told you that a couple of days before? You had it on my 60th birthday, as a matter of fact.
I believe it.
But remember what I told you today I wanted to talk to you about on the air?
You know, I have a vague memory of it. Why don't you, though, refresh me? I know you're a woman whose housing is very precarious, and you've
mm-hmm.
also given us a lot of reports from the street.
Mm-hmm.
I call you Linda A because we have a Linda L, and there's a Linda over in Palo Alto. There are many Lindas.
Oh, there's a lot of us.
You Lindas are, you know, multiferous.
I know.
So, yeah, refresh my memory. Tell me what you want to talk about and start talking about.
I said something about being in River Street, and then I had that detached retina surgery on the 21st of November. And it's going to take anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. It's healed, like, in 2 weeks, the retina itself. But the bubble that they put behind my retina where I had to work with my head down, I had to sleep on my stomach for, like, a week, week and a half. And so now I'm in a situation where I'm at River Street Shelter. I've been here for 30 days as of Friday. But they're, you know, not putting me out on Friday morning. They're actually going to wait until Monday morning and put me out. But I can't see. I'm what you would consider, right at this point, legally blind.
Wow. Of course, I did see you downtown. I guess
you
had no white cane or dog with you, but you're having trouble seeing even then, right?
Yes. Well, because my left eye was the good eye that I had the cataract surgery, and I could see real clear far away. That was the only one I had left. Because I was waiting to work on the other one, then the retina detached, and, well, that kind of shot that to hell.
You're completely blind now as we speak?
Pretty much. Everything is blurry on the bright side. I can't see out of my left eye at all.
So you're at the River Street, what I call the River Street Mini Shelter out at Coral
mm-hmm.
Street.
Mm-hmm.
That's a program that you have to actually sign up for, and you can be in for 30 days.
Yes.
And when I talk about there not being enough shelter each night, I don't usually include that because you can't walk in there and get shelter there. You have to actually
mm-hmm.
have been approved and have, you know, signed up in advance over a fairly long period of time. There's a waiting list
yes.
and so forth.
Quite a waiting list.
Well,
and with winter coming, it's even longer now.
And so what, you know, obviously people are wondering what you're going to do. What are you looking for from the audience? And what do you think we should learn from this whole situation? Aside from, I'm glad it's not me. You know?
Exactly. No, what I think the audience would probably learn from this, and I have learned that as well, is that, you know, even homeless people have health issues where things like this happen and we have no kind of support or services that can actually help us to recover. Inside somewhere. I'm trying to find, like, a hotel for about 3 or 4 weeks that I can stay at. I got to get a voucher. I don't know. I talked to my coordinator over at Building K today to see what he can come up with, because he's pretty much the one that helped me get here.
And, well, what I know Paul Brindell and the Shelter Project occasionally would have emergency housing for people coming out of hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that would have been me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the current situation is. I know, of course, that all the people are fighting for the scraps over at the
mm-hmm.
At the city council as they try to keep their little machine running as usual with all their high officials paid pretty much what they were paid before with a few deferments of 3% at their retirement and so forth, and slashing away at, of course, the bottom where the poor people are, whether it's the beach flats, community
mm-hmm.
center, or whatever.
Right.
What should be done?
I don't know. It just seems like it's going to get worse before it gets better. It's just like, you know, we're banging our head against the wall because, like, sometimes I feel like nobody's hearing us because nothing's getting done. I mean,
well,
yeah, I know it takes time, but, you know, this...
They hear us, but they aren't listening, and they have all
exactly.
kinds of great excuses, and they have their own programs and priorities
mm-hmm.
to take care
us?
Of.
What about
know?
Those human beings? We're human beings.
We're
human beings.
They're poor. You're poor human beings. You're a dime a dozen, Linda. You know, why don't you roll on down the road and leave some space for the next person they're going to process through the River Street mini shelter?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Nope.
No. Yeah. Good. Well, what it boils down to is poor people got to get together and help each other because they ain't getting help from the, you know, the rich. The rich want to maintain their positions, and you know, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I understand that.
And we actually have in the studio with us George Carlin reincarnated.
There we go.
Not really, actually. This is actually a man who just came from court today. Michael to his mom, yeah, and Crow to his friends. Why don't you?
I know him.
Yeah,
I think I know him.
Yeah, just get that mic there and Mike. And
yeah,
Mike, say hello to everybody here, Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
Right. So you look like you have your public defender's card scotched tape to your forehead. It's very humorous. But we have a woman on the line who's blind and.
Hello. How are you doing?
Okay.
And it doesn't know quite what to do next. And I don't know what to do next either. I guess you can listen in.
I will.
If you want to give us a number that people can call if they want to have any suggestions for you, obviously,
sure.
You know.
I'll do that over there if you don't mind.
Not at all. Go ahead.
Cell phone number is 316-8031.
316-8031 to talk to Linda.
Right.
And what is it you're looking for? Accommodations for a month?
At least.
What's that?
You know, at least a month, maybe 2 weeks until, you know, Jim can find something else for me, at this point.
And do you have any kind of Social Security? Is there
nope.
any money you can pay?
Nope.
You have no disability?
Nope.
You ain't got nothing?
Nope. Got nothing. Got nothing, honey.
Okay. Well, you know.
So I'll be listening.
Keep listening and keep calling in and telling us what's happening.
I'll talk to you later, Robert.
Hey, Linda.
Bye.
Thank you. Linda's been giving us reports from the street in the past down on Pacific Avenue. She's often called in from her phone, and now she's in trouble. If you want to help out Linda or you got any thoughts for her, 316-8031. I have not investigated the medical documentation. I can't prove she's blind. She was able to see out of one eye when I saw her earlier today. She says apparently that's deteriorated. Retina has become detached. If I understand that correctly, or something to that effect. Anyway, her number, if you want to reach her, is 316-8031. The number, if you want to reach us in the studio, is 423-4833. I'm sorry, that's the Huff line. That's out of the studio. It's 427-3772. That's the on-air number, 427-3772. The Huff line number isn't a good number to call if you want to pass on something that you don't necessarily want aired immediately, or you want to reach me personally. At a later time, I often pick up messages and then we'll call you back or, you know, meet you after midnight behind the dumpster or whatever. Let me know what's happening. 423-4833 is the off-air Huff line. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom is the group I work with. So in the studio with me is the Crow. And Crow, you're looking less sweaty than usual.
Yes. I actually have stopped drinking alcohol since my daughter's 16th birthday, because her 16th birthday wish was for me to stop drinking for a year.
Very good.
And it's October 1st, and I'm doing great.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't like booze, generally. I don't like boozers. But, you know, I know a lot of them, and, you know, it's just... I'm more of a candy man myself.
Yeah,
I got my addiction.
You look like Santa Claus.
Yeah, well, you bet. I'm getting bigger and bigger. But that's another story. Some people like it big, you know. But, but Crow, you went to court today, and you of course, are well known for your shenanigans, or actually you're very little known, but people who've listened to the station faithfully know that the drum circle, which reappeared yesterday successfully until it was driven away by the police at 6:30, half an hour before people were generally going to leave anyway, but they did play most of the afternoon. And it has to be said, people kind of went away of their own nervousness rather than because they were told to go away.
And it was cold and dark.
And it was getting cold and dark, as we are in wintertime.
He did a great job.
Were you there, Crow, yesterday?
No, I wasn't. I was busy tiddlywinking.
But I know that about a month, almost 2 months ago, you were part of the cleanup crew that tried to deal with the menace of the rolled-up fences that were being left behind by, sloppy city workers who made the mistake of fencing off public areas, the area around the drum circle,
that
the community members decided that was inappropriate. They were going to reclaim the public space. They took down the fence, rolled it up, and I think you were planning to, as you so peculiarly put it, or maybe, I don't know, hard to believe this one, but you were going to recycle the green mesh.
Oh, yeah. Now I remember. Yeah, I see.
Now he remembers, yes.
It comes clearly now that I'm under investigation here.
Yes.
When I arrived on the scene, my kids and the family members come down here to the drum circle and everything, and, I seen this yellow, green, orange, purple mesh.
It was actually green, I believe.
No, it wasn't. It was orange.
Really?
No, purple.
I don't think so.
No, green. No. Anyway, it was orange. And it was all meshed up on the sidewalk, right? Mm. That's why they call it mesh. And
it was green, folks, but we won't get into that.
It was
go ahead.
Orange.
I'll fight you. Let's go outside. Step outside. No. Actually, all the other fencing is orange, but the fencing they have around the three areas of the farm.
When it got caught on my shoelaces.
Oh.
That's the difference.
But in any case, you were trying to dispose of it. Yeah, I am right.
You are right.
Yeah.
You always
as I understand, there was some people, a DA was watching you from.
Oh, yeah, I didn't notice that. Nobody told me when I arrived.
From a car and essentially called the fuzz on you, as we like to say,
in
the
60s. Well, no, they didn't call the fuzz. They were the fuzz.
They were the fuzz.
But they're cute and peachy and fuzzy.
They called themselves.
Those guys were cool. But
in any case, you kind of took off in your vehicle, and they caught up with you.
Wait. We got recycling to talk about here.
We don't really. We've actually discussed it before, Crow, and I've got other stuff I'm going to play very shortly. So,
never mind.
Plus, I have guests who are calling in from New York City, and they're certainly more important than a homeless questionable like yourself. So, what happened in court today? I mean, you were accused of petty theft. What happened?
Okay, I went to the court and I ran into my public pretender, and he was real cool.
His name is.
His name is Mark B. Briscoe.
Okay, so this was a preliminary hearing, a trial.
Preliminary hearing for trial.
Uh-huh. And what kind of evidence was discovered at this?
Now
hearing?
The evidence was placed in the prosecutor's hands, and he read over, and basically they offered.
Yes.
For me to take any criminal prosecution, just as long as I stay away from the farmer's market.
Stay away from the drum circle. We don't want your kind around there. Right.
And what I don't
did
think
you, what,
so.
What, you didn't agree to that?
No, I don't. No, I wouldn't agree to anything.
Did you want a did you demand a jury trial?
Unless there was, agreement that something happens to Bush before he leaves office.
I don't think they have any control over that one. Yeah. Unless they want to take some initiative.
I'll plead guilty to that one.
Right. So anyway. you didn't agree to that. What did you agree to?
I agreed to jury trial.
So when are you going to go to jury trial?
Well, this is January 6th. The public defender, pretender, this guy was cool. He was like, looked at me and he was like, we're going to win this one. And I was like, no shit, I didn't steal anything.
Right. You were simply trying to do some recycling.
Well, I put it in my van and then somebody yelled out, hey, that's not yours. And I said, hey, you know what? It isn't. So I went and tossed the shit over in the other.
You thought it had been discarded by.
Yeah, my kids were going to get hurt from the stakes, leaning over loose and everything else. I didn't want them to knock them in the head and kill them,
That's a very sweet thing. I remember the next week you also were known for. You tripped. You tripped on the fencing that had been taken down, and they called the ambulance to make sure that you weren't injured.
Yes, some idiot called the ambulance.
Yes.
I think he was trying to cause more trouble than I was.
But in any case, January 6th. At what time does the trial begin?
January 6th. Most likely, I think they talk about the pretrial first.
So is January. Evidence, I don't. Right? I'm not sure what January 6th is. Usually
probably Sunday.
They have trial readiness on a Friday, and then the next Monday they begin jury selection. So we'll look for you to be drawn and quartered in early January.
Yeah.
What we're going to do now?
I'll
give you 30 seconds to
disappear.
Bark into the mic a bit if you'd like. Yeah, very good. Yeah.
I got to go anyway.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate your coming in. We're going to now get back to the sleep out on last Saturday night and hear with some of the.
Thank you.
It's interesting that these are all people who are not from Santa Cruz.
I bought the donuts.
Thank you.
You like them?
I didn't
you
actually.
Looks like you had five or six of them.
No, I have my own stash.
You don't like the dumpster dive.
You're dumpster donuts.
Hey, if you find
goodness.
A couple condoms
there,
don't blame me,
all
right?
In any case, these four people who were getting tickets, and we're going to be hearing them getting tickets as they talk to the police officers, were not from Santa Cruz, and they did leave. I actually haven't seen them around. They said they were going. I assume they left Santa Cruz the next day. But they stood up for their rights while they were here. Now, that might be because they figured, well, we don't care about these tickets. We're not going to be in town. But I told them, well, the tickets can follow you. Not necessarily as warrants, although.
Did you take a follow me the other day?
You're never going to see these weird, big yellow kind of paper things fluttering after you.
A little cop behind them, too.
Right. But in any case, they can run. ruin your credit. They can make it difficult for you to get a driver's license. So it's a serious decision when you decide to take a citation, even an infraction citation in Santa Cruz. I mean, people should know that. People have been saying, "Ah, tear up the ticket, I'll throw it away." And I understand the feeling about that. But you have to also understand that you're facing some consequences, and that's why people need to get together to fight this together.
Crow,
I
want
to thank you for coming
into
the studio.
Thank you, sir. Keep up the good work. And I want all those listeners to call in because I want to hear who's out there. Say hi to him. He's a very good man, and he's keeping up the good work ever since I came into this town 16 years ago.
And indeed, we want to point out you're not intoxicated. You're just intoxicating.
No, I'm actually getting high off the whole court case thing today.
Okay. Well, I can accept that. Plus, of course,
my
fine show, of course, which also is very
stimulating. I get excited when I come here.
I notice that. You know, try to keep your pants on, though, will you, please?
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
All right, I'm out of here.
If you want to call in and make comments about what you've heard, maybe, you know, insult Crow or, you know, to ask me why I have such people in the studio, you can give me a call at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. So thank you, Crow.
Okay, Radio Listener Land.
All righty. Yeah. Thank you. Here we go now, back to the Saturday Night Sleepout. It's actually Sunday morning as we begin this. We're probably repeating a little of what you probably heard on Sunday, which has been archived. Unfortunately, the Huff website is down at the moment, but it'll be up again. www.huffsantacruz.org is the place to go to hear the old shows. But here's some of the discussion of one of the what's happening here is two police officers are giving citations to four people. It's very cold. It's about 3:34 in the morning, and a number of us are videotaping this, and I'm also audio taping it, and you're hearing the audio tape. It's not the best kind of, it's not the clearest tape, but let's hear some more of it.
Is there illegal person?
There are many hotels, motels.
In case you didn't hear that, he's asking him where can we go legally to sleep.
Better legal places to sleep?
Is the city going to pay for finances spent at hotels?
You're going to have to go to city council and ask them. I don't know anything about that part.
At this moment, in itself, what would be illegal place to go and sleep?
Right now, I'm dealing with this man.
I'll wait for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was Joshua speaking.
Mr.
This is an officer, in a way, who's giving the citation.
Justice, your last name. Mr. Justice, where do you get mail at? Where do you get mail?
And what's happening here is that the officers
and
are...
And a second citation is being written, it appears.
Officers are avoiding the question, which is a very valid one. Where is a legal place to sleep?
What do you think?
And the reason it's a valid question is because this is the very reason that the sleeping ban was overturned in Los Angeles and San Diego through settlements, initially through a court decision, the Jones decision, and then through the Jones settlement and through the Spencer settlement, named after the lead plaintiff in San Diego in the Spencer case, which essentially found you cannot arrest someone or cite someone for sleeping at night unless you can give them a legal place to go. Or even more, even if you could give a few of them a legal place to go, if there's a general reality of a huge sheltered discrepancy where there's generally no shelter for people, then you can't give people tickets for doing what they have to do at night, which is sleep. Police officers probably know this, but they are not subject to an immediate lawsuit here. That decision is not actually binding precedent here. But it is a decision made by the Ninth Circuit Court in April of 2006 in the Jones case, and one which has had impact in other major cities, although not in Santa Cruz, our progressive town here. It had implications in Fresno. It stopped a camping ban there. Richmond changed its camping ordinance. Palo Alto has never actually had a sleeping ordinance, or hasn't, certainly doesn't currently have one. For those who Mike Rotkin may tell you, oh, you know, no city lets people sleep on its streets. That's just not true. No, we are one of the cities that has the worst sleeping ordinances, which states you can't sleep after 11 o'clock at night on any public property whatsoever, with no exceptions. And on much private property, it's also illegal. And even in most buildings, it's illegal to fall asleep under the actual wording of our sleeping law. It's a crazy ordinance. Look it up online. Municipal Code 6.36.
It'll be enough time for me to be able to make up my mind. But what time is it now? What time is it?
What do you think, Sparrow?
What's being asked here is, police officer says, well, you know, we're either going to take you to jail or you have to move. And he's saying, well, where can I go? He says, well, we can't tell you that. And he says, well, how much time do I have to make up my mind as to whether I want to go to jail or just start wandering around not knowing where I can sleep and not getting any information from you?
What I think is fair, what the law states, apparently, are two different things, because we're not causing any harm to any businesses. As far as I know, I don't think
that's something that we can't argue for. It's straight. The law is the law.
What's the law
state? You can go down to the library and you can actually look it up word for word.
Well, where do you
go? And, of course, you can't go down to the library. It's 4 in the morning, you know.
I can't recommend where you sleep. I can know.
Where would you go first
to sleep? To the house.
As of now, where can we move to that would be legal if we don't have a place to move to? Well, what's the point of packing up our stuff if we have no place to move it for? Wherever we're going to move, it's going to be illegal anyway.
You can get up and move wherever your feet are going to take you.
The same no matter where we go, it's their heads and it's going to be illegal. We don't have a friend's house to move, we don't have money for a hotel. Any of that stuff. So no matter where we go in Santa Cruz, what we're doing is apparently illegal, so why does it matter if we roll up our stuff and go, you know, all the way across town, and we're still going to take this police and all of us to go get arrested for
you. There we go. Okay, my car.
The officer's not answering the question, of course. In essence, they're saying it is illegal to sleep anywhere, but giving no legal alternative.
And they're writing them tickets and telling them, you know, to deal with it within 30 days, although often the tickets don't appear within 30 days.
Oh, they said that they'll arrest us. Will we get arrested if we stay here, or will we get arrested if we go anywhere at this point for RDF being cited and ticketed for this action?
I don't understand.
Like, if we were to move to another location...
What's your first name?
Would we be...
Shane, do you understand what the law is? What's your first name?
I'm just asking
Shane,
a question.
Do you understand what the law is? Have you ever had a cop for
that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. You don't understand what the law is? Would you get a ticket for? Do you remember the number?
I got a ticket for sleeping on the sidewalk.
Shane, that's okay. Then don't do that behavior anymore.
We're saying, like... If I go to another area and sleep on the sidewalk, where do I go?
You understand what the law is, correct?
I'm trying to ask you a question.
Where do you get mail?
I'm just trying to inquire. Where do you get mail?
Don't be confused that there are actually two officers talking to two different people. One of them is, you know, trying to write out the information for another one of these absurd tickets. And the first person, Josh, is asking, where can I go? Where can I go? And he says, you understand the law? And he says, yeah, where can I go? And, of course, the answer is nowhere. Which, of course, would mean the officer is engaging in cruel and unusual punishment, according to the Ninth Circuit decision, the Jones decision. The officer sounds like he doesn't want to say that. So instead, he just keeps turning it back on the sleeper. You understand the law, and he obviously doesn't really understand the law, because does the law actually say that people just can't sleep at night if they're poor? Is that the law? And, of course, that's actually the technical reading of the law. You know, I mean, if you really want to look at it, which, of course, is absurd and unconstitutional, as the federal Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit found. But City Attorney John Barisone and Mayor Cynthia Matthews and former Mayor Ryan Coonerty didn't think so, so they're continuing to instruct their police, or not to stop the police, or give other instructions to the police, to continue these human rights violations. And, of course, that's what we were there for, to show the human rights violations on the 60th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, and just how shallow and how hypocritical the Santa Cruz Police Department's policy is, and, you know, the Santa Cruz City Council's policy is, and, if you will, City Manager for Life Dick Wilson's policy is, because all these people are colluders in this denial of basic rights to poor people.
I'm not. You already stated that. I already got everybody's going to answer. I was going to get out of here on that.
Can you do me a favor and back up just a little bit, please? Thank you.
But what I'm asking is, if we move to another location and a police officer sees us again, will we be ticketed and cited again, or will we be locked up?
There's a potential for you, though.
I mean, it's kind of interesting to hear that, you know. Am I going to be cited, or am I going to be locked up if you catch me sleeping again? And the cop will say, well, it could happen either way. It's sort of like, you know, it's up to us. And actually, in a way, that's certainly quite true. It is up to them. And that's why, in a certain sense, the hostility that some people have for the police force around this, even though they're, quote, just doing their job, is quite justified. You know, police officers don't have to violate human rights because somebody orders them to do so, or because they get a complaint that other people in the neighborhood are nervous that there are poor people sleeping nearby outside because they have no legal place to be. Police officers are making a choice to give a citation. You know, I don't hear of anybody initiating a lawsuit against the police department for not enforcing the sleeping ordinance. I've never heard that actually happening, and I don't think it would happen. So what you see here are police officers, on their own responsibility, deciding to ticket these people. You know, they can choose not to. Or they can say, sure, go somewhere else and you won't be ticketed. Of course, the problem they're having is that they're on camera. And so if they say that, they're acknowledging the absurdity of the law, and they're acknowledging the fact that they're telling people to violate the law. So in a way, it might be kinder to this particular group of people if we weren't there. The police might tell them, oh, go, you know, hide here and hide there. We won't bother you. And then maybe they wouldn't be bothered. Or maybe another group of policemen would bother them. You know, it's hard to say, but it shouldn't be such a catch-as-catch-can, haphazard thing. The right to sleep legally, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere in Santa Cruz.
What did you get a ticket for?
It would be for camping.
What'd you get a ticket for?
Camp.
Okay, and don't do that behavior anymore.
Doesn't
anybody arrested for violating the municipal code for sleeping on the sidewalk?
Again, you see this cruel kind of, almost like toying with the sleepers that these police officers are doing. What'd you get a ticket for? He's saying, well, where can I sleep? You know, is it legal to sleep? What can I do now? Well, just don't do that anymore. Don't sleep anymore at night. And actually, I found them sleeping during the day later. So in a way, I guess they were following the officer's advice. But I've never heard of a cop go say to some people, go sleep during the day. Because during the day, people are much more visible. And it would seem to be even more regarded as more of a public nuisance or a focus of harassment. It's a no-win situation for poor people. And it's kind of a cruel, it's an inhumane kind of verbal activity that's going on here by the police department. They're going to go home to their beds. You know? They're going to go home and sleep soundly, and most of them won't even be in Santa Cruz. These guys are out-of-towners, most of them, I think. Although I don't know. I haven't got the stats. When he asked an officer if he lives in Santa Cruz, Sergeant Harms looked at me in a suspicious way. He said, why do you want to know? And I said, well, I'd like to know if the police officers I know, you know, who are getting paid by city funding actually live in the city. I'm curious. People attack me because, sometimes I'm up in Felton, sometimes I'm down in Santa Cruz. They don't like the fact that somehow I'm an out-of-towner. Actually, I'm not. I've been, essentially a fundamental Santa Cruz resident for 3 decades. But I don't get paid the huge amounts of money the police officers do for harassing poor people at night and during the day.
It seems a little bit excessive.
Shane, we'll close your eyes. I'll follow you.
Fine.
How much you weigh?
So the sergeant declined to give a straight answer to that last question. Simply throwing it back, he didn't say whether the individual would be cited or arrested. Actually, he said either could happen. And the behavior that he said had to be not repeated, of course, was sleeping at night. Something every human being has to do, regardless of who they are. This is what we call cruel and unusual punishment. The Ninth Circuit's Court of Appeals has called this. These officers are engaging in unconstitutional harassment at this time under color of law because they are offering no alternative to a group of people who have no alternative at this point.
Just another question. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. Where does the First Amendment come in with the right to peaceful protest?
I'm not going to stand on the sidewalk here and debate with you, okay?
I mean, it's what...
Notice the question was, where does the First Amendment come in the right to protest, since they were not just sleeping on the sidewalk, but they had signs around them that said, I think, no justice, no sleep till justice, no sleep, no peace, things of that sign, and the sleeping ban. And... so they weren't just sleeping, they were also protesting the sleeping ban. Now, in fact, the answer to the question, where do our First Amendment rights, the answer is, well, the courts have kind of decided 20 years ago in a more liberal but still conservative Supreme Court decision that you can't sleep to protest sleeping bans, except under certain limited circumstances. This was a decision in a Washington, D.C. case. Although it's got some threads hanging that are a little unclear. But it's a real good question. I mean, we're not out here, you know, they could have gone and hidden out somewhere and gotten some sleep perhaps far away, although it might have been less safe, who knows, than being in the light of the Pacific Avenue next to a table where people were protesting and next to people sleeping in vehicles. I was sleeping in my vehicle next to the sleepers. I didn't get ticketed. Nor did the other people sleeping in the vehicles who were housed people sleeping in their cars in solidarity. But we might have been if the police officers had chosen to do that or chosen to contact us first. Instead, they went after the homeless people on the sidewalk. But it's also a protest. So what are our First Amendment rights? What does the officer say? He doesn't say, he doesn't want to advise the citizen, the resident, the traveler of her, his rights. Instead, he says, I'm not going to debate with you. The question was not argumentative, it was a question. But, of course, a homeless person is being dismissed here as in an attempt simply to treat them as one unit in an ongoing kind of factory process of criminalization, which is exactly what we were fighting, what we'll be continue to fighting as winter deepens here in Santa Cruz.
I came here about an hour ago. I gave you a warning.
Yeah.
Okay? You didn't change your behavior, so now you're getting a ticket. Right here.
Of course, he didn't answer that question. He asked about the First Amendment, and the officer declined to answer.
You need to contact the courthouse within 30 days. The address and phone number at the bottom.
I'm just trying to gain information. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. There's no further information you can give me on that?
I'm not your legal counsel. I'm sorry.
No, absolutely not, but I mean, like... You are the law, and if I don't know the law, then I'm negligent. Therefore, I cannot know what I'm doing wrong.
Okay.
And since I believe in the First Amendment, since I believe in the Constitution, since the Constitution was written many years ago to protect our rights, and one of our rights is to a peaceful protest, and it is upheld by police like yourselves.
Absolutely. It doesn't afford you the opportunity to skirt around the law.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, laws are meant to...
Third squad car is arriving.
People have been trying to take away our constitutional rights.
Fourth squad car, beg your pardon.
Laws have been placed to basically scapegoat our personal rights and constitutional rights to be able to bend the law into whatever hands they feel is necessary. Either way, that would be breaking our constitutional rights. So.
I'm going to check a couple of these cars so there's any cameras and cars on the way. I got to try to move.
Okay.
So I mean,
I just feel as though our First Amendment was one of the most important, and this is discussed to be a peaceful protest. The police actually have the flyer.
So anyway, is now checking other cars to see if anyone is camped or sleeping in there.
That's why I'm kind of confused why we're being harassed on the whole issue.
The good news is possible that the new arrest was done to be back to the outline.
Yeah, they would definitely be violating that first order.
And some discussion is now happening between the campers. We have a third squad car, fourth squad car is pulled up, and I think we have a fourth one further down the street. What was that?
I said, Jill, I don't know, man. Like, they can arrest us, but it's only going to give us a place to sleep and 3 meals a day. I mean, technically, I guess they're giving us a place to sleep, so I guess that's the other option of where we could sleep.
It does seem a strange answer from the officers involved, although that's what they're doing. They don't want to acknowledge that they're in essence saying you can't sleep, period. But that's what the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz says. It's illegal to sleep in any public location whatsoever. They're not offering you a house or a hotel. They're not offering you a legal place to sleep.
They told me house or hotel, and I asked if the city would cover a hotel, and they didn't say anything. They just told me to go to City Hall, and I asked them where individually now. And
hi, guys. Here's the deal, okay? This is what's going to happen. I'm going to take off. I'm going to come back in about a half hour. If you guys are still here, still violating city municipal code, you will be arrested. Okay?
Is there a 30-minute period of that time? I heard that guy say maybe 24
No, that's
hours.
That's not law. That's just I'm leaving for 30 minutes.
All right, cool.
Coming back. If you're still here, you will be arrested.
Okay? Anyway, you
and you'll be arrested for likelihood to continue. Okay?
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Quick.
Kind of an interesting charge, as I've talked about in the air before, likelihood to continue. Sleeping ban in the city code is an infraction, and you're not supposed to be arrested for infractions. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, hi. My name is Nicholas Alex. I'm calling from New York.
Ah, yes. We're expecting you, Nicholas. Yes, you're a professor of sociology.
Yes. Yes, at Queen's College, yes.
And you've been...
I call the other number, and I get the fax.
Interesting. We don't have a fax, so that's unless someone has put one in, but I'm glad you got us at this number. It just means that you and I are going to have to talk directly, and perhaps any questions, people can email in questions at rnorris3@hotmail.com, but they can't call in directly. So you're how do we pronounce your last name?
Alexiou.
Alexiou.
Alexiou, yes.
Okay, and you are at the Center for Byzantine and Modern Greek Studies at Queen's College in Flushing?
In the Department of Sociology, basically, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I am in both departments. I teach also at the Greek Center, yeah, at the Byzantine Center.
Are you a listener to Democracy Now, by the way?
Of course.
Well, there was a kind of a brief report on mm-hmm. The Greek tumult,
yes,
on Democracy Now this morning. But I was hoping to get into a little deeper, and why don't I just sort of turn over the mic to you for the moment and ask you to give us a description of what's been happening there over the last week in Greece that we should
yeah,
be concerned about.
Yeah, I think because your audience is a special audience, it's not just any American audience that they have no clue about Greece, because I know the person who contacted you. You go to Joshua, right?
Oh, Joshua Frank.
Yeah, yeah, he's mm-hmm. fantastic. He was a former student of mine.
Oh, really? Yeah, and Joshua is a writer for Counterpunch.org. We've actually interviewed him here on radio.
I used to when I teach theory at the graduate level, and we did a lot of he did a very Marxist project for me. He was fantastic. So
I'm glad he brought you to us. I want to let me begin with this. The population and youth are confronted with a government of robbers and killers.
Yeah, this is a trick. I'm going to mention three forces that are
okay.
involved. There are many factors involved. One is the students, high school students, because the kid who was killed, he was 16 years old. He was a high school student, so the high school students are out, not the university students, which is unusual. Now, there are people who
let me stop you for a moment, because, again, although some people have listened to Democracy Now!, we have some who haven't. There was a killing, what was it, on Saturday? A 15-year-old student was killed by what the police say. Police insist it was a ricochet, but all the witnesses say it was a direct,
a
direct murder.
And today, they still try to figure out the ballistics report, which is very, very unfortunate. And again, we had a new wave of demonstrations because the report, it seems like a cover-up. And the students, again, were out.
And in fact, what we're talking about is burning of government buildings, attacks on police stations throughout Greece, the government looking for an excuse to declare a state of emergency but not declaring it yet, because it has a one vote majority or a two vote majority.
Yes, 151, out of 300 seats in the parliament.
And, but again, I mean, aren't both the political parties pretty corrupt in Greece?
Extremely corrupt.
So
this is the whole point. Part of, or partially at least, what happened, the reason why you have so many riots is because the government let the police, or that was the order to some point, to keep back and to not to intervene with the burnings and the vandalizing stores or you know, looting, because they want to demise the whole effect. Instead of seeing the real political problem, they want to make it a case of anarchists and terrorists.
So in other words...
Because they are in very deep economic scandals, financial scandals, they want to cover up again.
What is the real political problem, and is it related to our real political problems here in the United States?
Partially, yes, of course.
Define it for us, because we're, of course, in the deepening recession, deflation, depression.
Greece at this moment, which is part of the European Union and part of the Eurozone, is one of the a small number of countries who belong to the Eurozone. It's the country with the highest unemployment in the whole Europe. And if you see the statistics more carefully, you see that the unemployment among the youth is extremely high than any other European country.
But it's interesting that unemployment is kind of similar to the unemployment in the U.S., isn't it? If you compare
even higher.
Because I mean, I looked at
among
the youth. Although generally
and
speaking,
women, yes.
Generally speaking, though, I was looking at the U.S. figures, and they seem, in a way, sort of equivalent to Greek unemployment. Of course, we're not having rioting over here. Is that because we got such a better situation? Is it because people are more, they truck to authority? Is there a tradition of rebellion in Greece? What's that about?
Well, the students, they're very, very active, yes, as far as concerns the students. But part of what's going on now, it is a trick by the government to demise, to distract the people from the real problem, which is the political issue, and make it a case of terrorists.
And what is the political issue?
And the third factor is that for the first time, Greece has become, from a country exporting immigrants, has become a country of importing immigrants. So it's a huge population of impoverished and marginalized immigrants. And this is the group who did the actual burning and looting from the stores. It wasn't the students. So the government keeps saying that it was the students in order to cover up or to distract the people from, as I said before, the main issue, which is the political corruption and the economic scandals.
Well, now those are vague terms. What are the concrete issues that you think have to be addressed in Greece that the government is trying to cover up?
Education, that they need to have a better education. The health system is totally corrupted and in non-existence. People have to wait many days to find a room. In some areas, the island, the famous Greek islands, they don't have continuous and serious medical attendance. They're not very well equipped. The hospitals around the country are not well equipped. And also the role of the police. The police, because the incident happened in a very, very peculiar area. Well, I don't want to compare it, but it is like the village area here in New York, which is a very radical and a region with many radicals. So the Exarchia region of Athens traditionally has been a neighborhood with many radicals. And then the police, because the state needs to have a place like that in order to use as an excuse the terrorists every other time. So it is also the region of where the incident happened, very, very peculiar and semantic. And it's close to the Polytechnic, which is, to the Greeks, it is a symbol for the students' events. When the students revolted in 1973 against the military junta, it was pretty close to that region. So it is a political significance to the whole point.
So you're saying that it's the Exarchia quarter of Athens. Is that what we're talking
yes.
about?
That's, yes.
That's the quarter. It's kind of like it's kind of like the village. It's a bohemian radical quarter.
Yes.
It's kind of a lot of anarchist organizations where
yes,
anarchism.
Yes.
Not, we're not talking about terrorists. We're talking about people who want to live their own lives.
Yes. Yes.
And who believe
exactly.
in self sufficiency, independent of
exactly,
the government,
exactly,
and so forth.
Exactly.
So in this, but you're saying in this situation. The unions, I guess, are declaring a general strike. Is that
yes,
what's going on?
Yes.
And what's the significance of that? I thought the unions were a part of this whole corrupt mess, at least the leadership in the unions.
Well, the leadership, yes. But there is a genuine movement. It's also a very real movement because of what happened to their pensions and the whole social security system. It is in danger because the government played a lot of their money to the stock market, and millions of euros were disappeared. People fear that they're going to lose their pensions, which is similar to what the Bush administration tried to do here. So there are some similarities with them.
Many people are afraid of losing their pensions. Is there a lot of sympathy for the students? I mean, if you look at the mainstream media, International Herald Tribune, AP
yes,
stories.
I read them.
You know, you see this kind of the chaos and the anarchy is spreading. Terrorism will not be
They overdo it because it's not.
What I'm saying is, do most people in Greece see this as students who are destroying the country and our businesses, or do they see this as a legitimate protest against a government that it was trying to privatize, sell out, stock marketize, and loot the country,
yeah.
And essentially balance the budget on the backs of poor and old people?
This is what the government wants to do. This is exactly you realize. You said it very, very, very. That was very well put. Because the government wants to do that. They want to distract the people again. And instead of showing that it is a serious political issue, they want to make it as a terrorist attack. That's why they let the marginalized parts of Greece or groups that are in Greece now.
Well, I noticed there are very few deaths in all this rioting. You know, I mean, there
yeah.
have been some casualties. Does that mean the police are holding back?
They're holding back, yeah.
And the rioters are also not interested in killing people, it looks like. Have you been? Do you have friends over there that you're like directly contact with?
And there's some of them, their stores were vandalized, but they're supportive of the students, and they know. And some of them, because for the first time they told me it was some kind of connection through SMS, through the computers and cell phones, that the anarchists mentioned that if everybody put some kind of dark plastic bags around their stores, they will know that they are part of them, that they're supportive, and they won't touch those kinds of stores. So, and the anarchists, they keep declaring that although they can abduct people, they can kill people, they don't or vandalize stores, they don't do that because they don't want the government to use them. So who is doing the vandalism and the burnings are either policemen because they cover their faces. We don't know. Those who do the damages are people with covered faces.
So you think provocateurs,
yes,
and right-wing
absolutely.
Groups are involved
absolutely.
In this? But, I mean, is this speculation, or do you have any indication that this is actually true, any evidence of this?
Well, they don't have evidence yet, but also that will make, it has another dimension in the foreign policy, because tomorrow is a very important meeting in Europe of the 27 European leaders, and the Prime Minister, Karamanlis, he has to apologize. He has to give some explanations about the economic scandals. And also, it is this concept with the Macedonia issue. I don't know if you're aware. If they call it Firum, the former democracy of Yugoslavia, they want to use the name Macedonia. And the Greeks are so fanatics about that, because northern Greece is called also Macedonia. And it is a serious national issue. So,
What is a serious national issue?
It's called the Macedonian question.
Which is?
Which is this country from the former Yugoslavia.
Right.
Now it's called FYROM, FYROM,
uh-huh.
Former Yugoslavia of Macedonia,
mm-hmm.
and they want to call themselves Macedonia.
Oh, I see. And Greeks don't like that. Some Greeks.
Yeah, they don't like that at all. They go crazy.
Right.
For 10 years now, it is.
It's kind of
a limit. The special American.
It's a matter of name rather than anything else. Kind of a strange.
Issue. And they want to give it a Northern Macedonia or something to a geographical term to distinguish from the Greek part, which is Macedonia. And of course, Turkey is there. You know that the Greeks have all these bad feelings.
Rivalry with Turkey.
Rivalry with
Cyprus
Turkey.
And so forth.
And
yeah.
At this moment, the riots, if they continue, they weaken Greece's position to negotiate.
So what would you like to see come out of this tumult in Greece that would help the Greek people? What do you think? What's your vision?
Immediately. The government must step down and go to elections. Of course, I want to see a new system that the two major parties, PASOK, the socialist, and the New Democracy, the conservative right-wing party, they are so corrupt that they cannot govern. So if we see, and the left is also split, it is a traditional left, still in the Soviet model, following the Soviet model, Mrs. Papirigas, and the new left, the progressive left, they keep accusing the left, this part of the left, that they are behind all this. So you see, the anti-communist fear is still there. So every time a progressive party tries to tie the student movement with a political discourse, a political debate. Mass media and the mainstream politicians, they accuse always this part of the left. So the left is split. The two major parties are so corrupted. So we have to go to elections at this moment. And I want to see to break this, as we have here, the two-party model, Democrats and Republicans, keep changing power positions. So this is what's going on in Greece. It's either New Democracy or PASOK or the Socialists. So we need to have a government that nobody has a majority, and smaller parties like the New Progressive Left can be part of the government. This is the only way out.
Do you see, I mean, it seems like you're saying that this sounds like a reformist approach in the sense that you're not looking for any groups to take power or fundamental changes, revolutionary changes.
No, it's impossible, no. I don't think so, because the American interest and the Soviet and the Russian leaders are so big in Greece now because of the new natural gas pipelines that are coming from Russia. So they want to have this stability in the region, and they will never allow radical changes.
Huh. So.
And also, we as Americans have a major interest in the Kosovo or the Bosnia regions there, or FYROM. Remember that on the second election of the Bush administration, the first political decision of Bush was to recognize FYROM as Macedonia. And that's the formerly
part of Yugoslavia. Recognized this breakaway republic
by the Bush administration.
Yeah, that sort of splitting up Yugoslavia into all these
little
countries.
So the interests of both Americans and the Russians are tremendous in the region. And they won't.
With that. What about the interests of the Greek people? What do they want and what do they need?
Well, a non-corrupt government, and only with the participation of the left that will be possible.
Okay, but I mean, if you ask the students what they want, I guess they're just asking for elections. The people who are marching on the parliament just want new elections.
Yes, yes.
They're not demanding that there be a fundamental change in the system of government that actually, allows. Them to toss out foreign interests.
Well, this is a problem because they're high school students, and this is a problem. They are not tied to political party because they don't have any security, or they don't have much trust to the current situation or the way that at this moment the political parties do politics. So they don't trust anyone, and this youth, it's totally, or not totally, but somehow still a political, or at least they don't vote yet. So everybody tries to play or to be sympathetic to the youth just because they feel that in the next 2-3 years that they can be at an age they can vote for their party. So
the youth is really trapped. We're talking about tens of thousands of people in the streets. Is that right, or is it only small groups of people in the streets?
Those groups have various reasons. It's not a united front. There are fractions, unfortunately, because the politics that the two parties followed all these years was the type of clientelism. Most of the Greeks, they don't vote in terms of their ideological affiliations, but they vote because it is some kind of the hidden economy thing. Everybody gets a job in the public sector. It is overwhelming.
So you vote for your party and they give you a job.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So this is they have developed a culture among the people of clientelism. So everybody looks for themselves. It's not a united front. And unfortunately, the left is not yet in the position to lead. And every time they do that, especially this small party of the progressive left, they've been accused as anti-national, anti-patriotic, as terrorists.
Right. Well, I guess, what's coming up, it's already Friday over in Greece right now. Is that what?
Yes.
And what... I understand that's the first or second day of a general strike, or is that that's happening? Now, there was a general strike last year, 2007, in Greece, right?
Yes,
and that didn't last too long, but it had some significant impact on the government, or?
Not really.
No, okay.
Not really.
A general strike, here in the U.S., you got labor unions down to, what, 10, 12, 13% of the, but the labor unions are much stronger over in Greece,
mm-hmm.
right? So when they do a general strike, people go out, doctors go out. Educators go out, schools close down, government buildings close down.
I remember when here in New York we had the problem with the transit authority, and the unions were divided because the leader here or the representative of the local union, I don't remember his name, French name, what was his name, he decided to go on strike. The national union went against him.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Are the unions united in Greece about this general strike that's presumably happening over there now as we speak?
It depends on the sector. It depends on the sector.
Are they as united as they were?
There are unions that are traditionally controlled by the left, and they are very
let's
strong.
Let's say, are they as united as they were a year ago when there was a massive strike?
Yes. I think, yes, because a lot of the money that they had they're lost.
So people are concerned over there that the government essentially has sold out their pensions, and
they're going to be a serious problem. And
similar to here, right?
I don't know if you heard about a monastery in Mount Athos.
Mm-mm.
That the government exchanged land, public land that belonged to the Greek people, with this monastery. and the buildings that they were built during for the Olympic Games. Now the monastery bought them, very very cheap, a few thousand euros, and now they try to sell it millions to foreign investors.
And
so
that
was a huge scandal.
Again, this is to balance the budget, or this is for the private profit of a few of the politicians.
Exactly.
Which
one of the politicians stepped down, who was the one of the closest.
No, no. By the way, we're talking again. We're talking with. Give me your the proper pronunciation of your name again.
Alexiou, Alexiou, Alexiou.
You're Nicolai.
Nicholas.
Nicholas Alexiou, and you are a professor of sociology at Queen's University.
Yeah,
and we're talking to you from New York. And by the way, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Greece and what's going on over there. We wish you could call in, but you can't. I'm checking, however, email rnors3@hotmail.com. In case anybody has questions or comments for the professor here, you can sort of send them in, so please do that. Go ahead with what you're saying.
So it is a complicated issue, the situation of Greece. We have to see it as a typical example of Western democracy, especially the South of European countries. It's typical. The same happened in Italy many times, in Spain, and, of course, in France last year, if you recall, what happened with the riots in the African immigrant community. And Sarkozy brought in the army. So it's not typical only for Greece, but it is an example of the corruption and the dead end that Western democracies have reached. And it is a moment of transition and a moment we need radical changes. And unfortunately, at this moment, with a transition in power in the United States, we cannot see that, because you have to see which ones which direction the policies of the Obama administration will go to the region. The American American decisions or interests will play a significant role, and I hope that the new administration will help Greece to come out of this crisis. This is what I hope. But we have to see that. Still, we are in this transitionary period. And that's why probably the Prime Minister of Greece stays behind, and he hasn't really took any action, because he wants to see or to talk with the Americans first. I don't know if you can hear me now. Hello?
I'm sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah, the shooting of Andreas Grigoropoulos has produced, sparked, has been the catalyst for nationwide riots in cities all over Greece, and also protest demonstrations all over Europe. I'm looking over some of the stories, on the World Socialist website, WSWS.org, and I find, for example, the interesting claim that the last fatal shooting of a minor in Greece, I assume by the police, took place in 1985. Is that true?
Yes. The new statistics show that after the time of the democracy, after 1974, after the fall of the junta, police killed about 100 people.
So how many people?
100 people were killed like that.
Right.
And no one was really prosecuted. So what one of the demands of this youth is that until now, please, I mean, this is the end. You have to do something. Someone has to pay for all this. Because we have a system that doesn't punish those who kill the Greek youth. Also in politics we see that.
If they're police officers.
Yes, if they're police officers.
Uh-huh.
And the police officers, they're also victims, because they don't have the proper training within the force. They don't have psychological tests that in all advanced European countries go through some kind of training or support group.
Yeah.
So they don't have that. Although the European mm-hmm. money, they keep coming to Greece. They got until now billions of euros.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I hear this often. Oh, the police have to be better trained. It seems to me that there are. No,
yeah.
I hear that everywhere, and I wonder if it's not a matter of training. It's a matter of the system itself and how it operates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not so much, let's give these guys sensitivity training. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but if people are, you know, police are operating in an unaccountable system where, you know, they have the power and there's no ability of the community to, you know, for
there's
them
no
to be.
There's no fear of punishment, And also,
or even
held
account.
Sometimes they want to use that.
I'm not even talking about punishment. I'm talking about accountability. But
let me
point out something or ask you another question, which is here's a claim that the government is under pressure from Brussels to cut its budget deficit, which is Brussels being the where I guess the European Union is headed,
mm-hmm.
the head of the European Union,
yeah.
of which Greece is a member, which is higher than that allowed in Eurozone, and the Prime Minister Karamanlis mm-hmm. has embarked on a program of attacking pensions and job security, and these measures have sparked off a number of strikes. And you're saying the government has attempted to divert. Actually, you didn't say this, but the article says he's attempted to divert. The government has attempted to divert social tensions into ethnic rivalries by targeting refugees and migrants. Is this true?
Absolutely, absolutely true, absolutely true. And again, Greece was unprepared all these years. There is no social policy towards immigration. This is something new for Greece. Greece, as I said, traditionally was a country exporting immigrants, and now that heavily they import immigrants, they don't know
when did this change happen?
Change happened for many reasons. And
no, not why, but when did it happen?
Oh, when it happened? Basically, in the middle, the decade of 80s it started, and the 90s.
Because we have this, as you know, in the United States, we have the same mass, you know, hysteria about Mexican-American and Hispanic immigration from Latin American countries, you know, even though it's prompted by often the, you know, NAFTA-type policies down south. So it's interesting to see it happening in Greece, too. It seems like a lot of the problems that are happening over there are to some extent replicated here, although it seems the reaction... I mean, in Bolivia, you know, they overthrow the uh-huh. government, they take back the rights of the people, they throw out the foreign profiteers who are trying to seize the water. Here in the United States, you know, things just get worse and people sit around waiting for Obama to appoint a war cabinet. I mean, I'm kind of, it depresses me, let me put it that way.
But we have some kind of policies towards immigrants. And, of course, things changed after 9/11. But America, United States, it is a nation of immigrants. At least in sociology, we recognize the diversity of, you know, ethnic diversity, racial diversity, all kinds of differentiations. Of course, we don't agree on our convictions, but nevertheless, we realize that this is a multicultural society. Greece, until now, had... it was a society more coherent in terms of religion, at least, where still there is no separation between the state and the church, and the overwhelming majority of the people are Greek Orthodox, although there are other minorities now. They're Muslims, they're Catholics.
How are the churches responding to the strikes, the protests, the police repression, and the looting, and also that's following, and the burning of government buildings?
They're really relieved.
They're relieved
because their attention left from their focus, because the church was involved in a huge economic scandal with the Mount Athos, the monastery that exchanged land with the Greek state.
So this wasn't just
and they made billions of euros.
So this wasn't a little scandal that happened with some small church. It had to do with the central Greek Orthodox, the main church in Greece.
No, it was this part, this particular monastery, but it took extreme dimensions because many politicians were involved. Mm-hmm. Of the government, people of the government were involved, and it took a different dimension. So the Greek church Yes, was at the center of this scandal.
Here in the U.S., as you know, there was a major controversy, though not apparently among the main parties, as to whether to bail out the criminals who put us in the situation we're in financially.
Yes.
And they ended up, you know, bailing out the corrupt financial institutions that put
yes.
us in the situation, I think, to no avail. And in Greece, there's a similar concern, I understand, about the plan, a proposed bailout for Greece's main banks that's happening over there, too, right?
Absolutely.
People
are against that.
Now, here in the U.S. you had Obama and McCain getting together and agreeing there should be a big bailout, although some Democrats said no. What's happening over in Greece? Do the major parties are they so corrupt they agree simply to, you know, to throw more money at the very people whose security bullshit has produced the situation we're in now? I don't know
yes,
if they're bundling securities.
The two major
in
parties, yes. There are three opposition parties. We have a parliament of five parties in Greece. So the two major parties, though, that they make about 80% of the vote, they do agree on the main issue. So there's not much change.
They want to bail out the banks over there,
yes,
too. Yeah,
absolutely.
So the banks are calling the shots, or at least the people who support the banks are calling the shots.
Well, the Greek banks, though, they had one advantage because they invested heavily in the Balkan Peninsula, and they were somehow semi-autonomous. So the banks were very strong because they had a lot of money and a lot of power by investing in the region.
Are the riots and protests that are happening having a positive effect on challenging these policies, or do you see them as a way of diverting attention from other solutions? Do you see them as a road to solution, as a way of, as an upheaval? It sounds like you don't, because you're saying there's really no possibility of a real revolution in Greece.
I'm afraid at this moment, mm-hmm. yes. The form that the class struggle has taken now in Greece, it is against the working class because they are trapped. There are many dynamics, but those dynamic groups, they cannot find a political expression yet. I think that the cycle of the political parties and the ideologies that developed and they did politics after 1974, after the junta years, I think they reached their cycle. And this is the moment. This is a moment of transition, of crisis. And unless something really, really important comes out, a group of people the working class people take their destiny into their hands, nothing will happen. And at this moment, they don't have neither the ability, because they are very poorly organized, nor they have the people.
So you don't see this as a 1968 Paris situation?
No.
Yeah.
No way. No way, because you don't see the artists there. You don't see the people of you don't see the intelligentsia playing any significant role.
Intellectuals
The May of 68, Jean-Paul Sartre was in the streets with the students. So you see the absolute absence of the Greek intelligentsia from all that.
Well, maybe they need to. Maybe next week they'll jump on board. What do you think?
No, it's too late for them. They prefer to stay at home and watch all this from their couches, unfortunately.
You're here. It sounds like some of us here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
This is a
new phenomenon because the people of the art, people of the intellectual groups, they used to be the avant-garde. They used to be in the front line.
Right.
And because of the corruption, because the system managed either to absorb them by giving them state money
right.
to publish their books, to go to different conferences, they're corrupted.
Nice new
now.
Computers.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly,
yes.
What about the big scandal with Siemens?
Professor,
the German company that...
what about poor people on the streets? What about poor people... You know, I'm concerned often on this show with homeless people in Santa Cruz. We have a large homeless population, which only 5% will have a legal place to sleep tonight. Most of them face a criminalized law. I don't know. In Greece, do you have a large homeless population in the major cities?
Oh, yes, of course.
And more
we see that in the new era of globalization, more and more people are marginalized. And, of course, they become paupers. And this is a problem. By falling down the economic scale, they also lose the ability to become a class with consciousness. There is no consciousness. So
now, is there
no fear for participating in meaningful revolt.
Is there any union at all between students, high school students, or the people who are speaking up angrily against this police misconduct? Because here in Santa Cruz, we have, you know, an increasing hostility toward the police department's policies on the streets of Santa Cruz as the winter deepens toward poor people. It isn't manifested as violence. It isn't manifested as looting. It's manifested differently.
Yeah.
But, you know, it certainly isn't manifested as organized political opposition. And sometimes, you know, people who like to look at, you know, the political opposition being organized as some sort of necessary precondition aren't seeing that sometimes things just you get spontaneous eruptions from the base of people who've just said, enough. I mean, is that what's happening in Greece? Are the students saying enough?
Yes, this is it.
And are they joining together with homeless people, poor people, other people who are also saying enough, even if it's not organized political parties, even if, you know, they don't have the backing of the Stalinists or the, you know, this group or that group?
Well, this is exactly the moment of transition now, because this particular youth, this new generation of Greeks, they do not trust the political parties. So they don't want the parties to play a role in that. They want to go to the streets autonomously.
Right now,
they want an autonomous presence.
As you look at the progress of things in Greece, do you want to see more tumult or less tumult? In other words, are you encouraged when you hear about more cities erupting in anger and protest against the police department, or do you prefer to see it the police departments and the government? Or do you prefer to see it damped down? Are you afraid of a massive repression by the government, a state of emergency? I don't know, calling in foreign troops, whatever they would do over there.
No, I doubt that they're going to do that.
But, I mean, in other words, when you look at this, do you want to see more of what you've seen in the last few days or less in terms of ultimately creating a better situation for Greece?
Well, you know, I'm a Marxist, and I believe that the revolution is the only way. But at this moment, the way things happen are totally wrong, so I don't want to see that.
So
what we see is totally wrong, and partially it is very convenient for the present government.
And what is totally wrong, you're talking about these eruptions of anger, violence, looting, and so forth. You think this is destructive rather than ultimately constructive?
Exactly.
You're not an anarchist, you're a Marxist.
Exactly.
I better get an anarchist on the phone, too, to get her point of view. Listen, I want to thank you again for calling in. You want to sum up anything that you don't think we've covered that you think we should, and also give a point of contact so that people who've heard this and perhaps felt frustrated that they can't call in because apparently we've got a line that's screwed up.
It was a problem.
That.
I know that a lot of my students here, they call me. I see their text messages. They're frustrated.
I'm taking a look at my email. I don't see any text messages. Again, it's rnorse3@hotmail.com. rnorse3@hotmail.com. If I'm looking, you know, to see if anybody has sent a message, and I see a lot of messages, but nothing about this particular show. So we can try and do this again on Sunday if you're up for it and see how things are going at Sunday morning.
I hope so.
You know,
sounds
or maybe
to me.
I don't know what your situation is like. It's must be Sunday afternoon for you in New York. But I do want to thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And again, we have been talking with Professor Nicholas Alexiou. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Of Queens University in New York. And
yes.
Professor of Sociology.
City University of New York, and today Mayor Bloomberg, he announced another huge budget cut, and next week on the 16th, our governor is going to slash more. So you see that the problems that this capitalist society creates are universal.
Well, I don't want to see you throwing any firebombs at the banks there. That would be a bad thing for you to do, okay?
No, this is not the way to overthrow capitalism.
Okay, well, I don't think the Greek students agree with you, but we'll see what happens over there.
Okay.
Hey, thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. That was Professor of Sociology Nicholas Alexiou, who was... I kind of apologize for not being well enough brief to kind of control the conversation better. Plus, the professor has a strong accent, which some of you may find difficult. I was finding it a little difficult at points, but I do appreciate his calling in. And I think it's very important and interesting what's happening over in Greece. I guess I get all hopeful and excited whenever I see, you know, the possibility of the... corrupt and repressive government being challenged from the base by masses of people, even if it's a violent challenge. And so, you know, I probably wouldn't feel so good if somebody was burning down my house or shooting me, for sure. And I don't know how I'd feel if I were in Greece. But I know that we're all looking for ways to see real change in this country and real change in the world. And when some people try to do it, I think we have to look very closely at what they're doing and see what's happening. And that's the whole point of this particular analysis. Here's a little music, and then it's back to our own little peaceful protest at Pacific Avenue trying to end the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. I'm the Robe, Robert Norse. Call-in number is 427-3772, and we actually do have a working line, 469-3119. I think that Nicholas misdialed, but hey, it's okay. We did have some significant interview with him, and the show is going to be archived once the Huff website is up again at huffsantacruz.org. That should happen in a couple of days, and here's a little more from the Saturday morning sleepout.
This is what's going to happen. I'm going to take off. I'm going to come back in about a half hour. If you guys are still here, still violating city municipal code, you will be arrested. OK? Okay.
Is there a 30-minute period of that time? I heard that guy say maybe 24
No, that's,
hours.
That's not law. That's just I'm leaving for 30 minutes.
All right, cool.
Coming back. If you're still here, you will be arrested.
Okay? Anyway, you
and you'll be arrested for likelihood to continue. Okay?
I got a question for you. Can you, take me to jail now without charging you anything so I can sleep there?
No, I have to come back with the van. There's too many of you guys. I can't put you on my car.
Well, no, I'm just asking, just for me personally. I don't care about the rest of you. No. You're offering me.
We'll deal with it when I come back. Okay?
By all means, I'm going to jail.
Yeah, take a shower.
And the three officers and three squad cars, I guess the fourth is already pulled away, get into each of their cars. The sergeant, officer in a way, and the other officer, a bald-headed man who just arrived, left.
So you see,
all he said we had to do was pack up our gear. So all we got to do is pack up our gear and stand here. It's not illegal for us to stand
here. Yeah, we're technically not camping.
As a matter of fact, I can lean on that building. So, whatever.
What were you saying?
I was saying since the moment we got here from the first cop we talked to this last officer, talking to my friend over here, they can't give a straight answer. I'm kind of getting the vibe that they do this all the time, and not as so strange.
Well, you're not required to make a stand if you don't want to. What the cops are really telling you is if you move on and scurry into the bushes, we probably won't follow you or see you, and you can probably do what you want. As long as we don't see you again, is what they're saying. But they don't want to say that because that would indicate that all they're trying to do is to move you from a visible spot downtown to somewhere else. It's actually equally illegal everywhere else. That's the point, though.
Oh.
So anyway, don't feel that you're obliged to do one thing or another. It's up to you entirely what you want to do.
I thought I was going to see this through. I'm mad at my word, so I guess I'm going to see this through.
Well, yeah, man.
Regardless of what side of the bar,
I have a warm place to sleep on Monday.
And actually, we actually really don't have anywhere else to go.
Our squad
got busted up and somebody stole some of our stuff, so we really don't, and I don't have time to go try to find someplace better to sleep tonight.
Where's your stuff safest at? In booking. Come on.
I would disagree with you there, really? My friend.
Make sure you sign that everything is there, man.
Yeah. Well, actually, oh no, I would go to jail for
one. Still one police officer, it looks like. Could be Officer Inouye or Sergeant. Anybody notice the name of the sergeant?
This is so foreign. I don't know. It's so foreign.
I didn't notice the sergeant's name.
So foreign to me.
We have a very perspicacious camper urinating in a discreet manner. So you say this is the warmest spot you've been on?
What that means is he's actually pissing into a bottle while inside a sleeping bag in order to be both sanitary and private.
We've been in Santa Cruz for 8 days, and this is definitely the warmest spot we slept, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's warmer than the forest, which is where we've been sleeping.
Of course, you're sleeping here in front of Borders, next to the building.
Well, the sun is soaked up all day long by all the concrete and stuff. Yeah. So, and the building's pretty good wind blockers. So it's pretty warm here. There's no junkies running by, and if there are, then they haven't stopped to be like someone in the woods. I mean, who pulls on it?
I see a guy walk to him, Black Cruiser. He rolled by. Did you really say nothing?
Oh, yeah, I saw him, too. That was pretty funny. Now, one of the junkies that were, the regular in the forest where we were sleeping, just rolled by on his bike and didn't say anything.
No, he kind of said, hey. And he's kind of rolled on by.
I can't really go to jail because if I get searched by cops, that knife's illegal. So,
is there any anybody might be able to hold on to something if we were to stay here? Might be considered.
Well, it's not illegal for us to stand here. So technically, they're going to have to not only violate the Constitution if they want to arrest us, but also violate their own municipal code.
The cop had no fucking answer.
He's like, I'm not about to get to an argument about that, sir.
I'm glad you loved it, but I think it's really dumb. You're the cop, you're supposed to know your law.
No, yeah. And if you can't tell me the law, then I'm still negligent, and you can't technically arrest me for something that I don't know, that I asked you, and you wouldn't tell me the freaking answer to, man. You can't arrest me for that. You are just as negligent and just as guilty as I. Negligence is not an excuse for the law.
The thing I don't understand is it's
then why
not,
the fuck do you have a job, dude?
The thing I don't understand is it's not a penal code. It's a municipal code.
Yeah.
Which means that all they could do is write you a ticket. So how are we going to get arrested for a new municipal code? I don't get that. That's why I was trying to ask him. Obviously, he needs a refresher course on the American law system, which apparently I know more about than he does, but, hey, you know, it's cool. All he has to do is know how to enforce the law. He doesn't have to understand it. I understand. It's not his job.
That's interesting, because 10 years ago we changed the law, or we pressured the council into making that two instances of sleeping, just sleeping, was not a misdemeanor any further. So you're not being charged with a misdemeanor. So it's not a misdemeanor, which they normally can arrest you for. It's a continued infraction. But there is a claim that the police have that they, if you continue to violate law on an infraction, they say they can arrest you.
What's the continuation of
it? Well, it means if you do it again.
If you annoy them enough by doing it.
And it's interesting that Mike Rotkin, who is a great supporter of the sleeping ban law, not only on my show and in public, but at city council when there were some people who asked that it be changed or suspended over the winter. That was 10 years ago, and the actual debate happened at city council after an election when supposedly we suddenly got a majority that was interested in really reforming the law and ending the sleeping ban and blanket ban sections of the camping ordinance in the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. Mike Rotkin kept insisting that we couldn't make sleeping an infraction only, because that meant that people could keep piling up tickets and with there being no consequence until, you know, those tickets reach court a month later. They could have 30 or 40 tickets and they just sort of ignore them. The reality, of course, is that if someone ignores an infraction, the police come back and arrest them, even though it's not clear what their authority is for doing that. Rotkin, though he's been around for 30 years, he's now our new vice mayor. And I mention him not because I have any personal animus towards him, but because he's the person on whom a lot of the city council relies for advice and knowledge on these issues. And he's also the person who challenges me most vocally at city council. He did it again on Tuesday night when I spoke up, and I'll be talking about that on Sunday when I have a longer period of time to talk on the air, and we'll be going into what's happened in the last few days downtown, not just on Sunday morning, which is what we're listening to now, the Santa Cruz the sleep out that we had on the 60th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights. These are four sleepers who were willing to deal with police harassment because they felt they had a right to sleep, not anywhere and everywhere, but just somewhere. And they discussed their reasons for being there, and they were deciding what to do. And we're going to listen to them a little bit more in their discussions.
Yeah, you violate the same law. You're violating the law by camping, meaning you're sleeping, actually. You're not camping.
I feel stupid.
But if you violate it repeatedly, one time after another, then that in evidence is a desire to continue to do it, or the tendency to continue to do it, and they can claim they're jailing you for that basis. But I don't even know. I've never seen a code section that actually states they can do that. But they do. Whether, in fact, there's any justification for it, question for lawyers.
Can you tell us what we're being charged with? To be able to arrest us. They do not tell us what we're being charged with, as well as telling us...
They already told us what we're going to get arrested for. It's for continuance.
But at the time of arrest, at the time that they put the cuffs on you, they have to tell you what you're being
charged with. According to the Constitution, they can't arrest us for doing this, but they're going to. There are a lot of things that police are not supposed to be able to do that they do anyway. Say it.
A mysterious chalker seems to be chalking in quite legible chalk in the sleeping... Here comes a cop and the car hustles past as the woman delivers some newspapers to boarders. Someone has added to end the sleeping the word ban in large yellow chalk letters, erasable chalk, I imagine, on the sidewalk in front of boarders. And suddenly on the other side of this group of sleep criminals, we have the word sleep deprivation.
Are we the sleep bandits?
Apparently so, yes. Sleep deprivation is a form of...
The cops are the ones to be taking dreams. We're just part of the sidewalk.
Pay no ticket.
Pay no ticket.
Arr.
Form of torture. So, what are you guys thinking of doing? And
dude, no matter where we go, like what they're saying is basically what we're doing is legal. They're not giving us a option to go to any place that we could lay our head that would be of any legal status, supposedly. This is the most legal thing I can see since it is exercising our First Amendment. And right now, basically, like they can't touch us, or else it would be like a big media frenzy. As far as I'm concerned. They can't arrest us. And if they do, definitely, like... Dude. Yeah, no, I saw that.
Yeah, there's two cop cars, like, hiding down the alley right over there. They're just chilling, waiting for us.
They probably have surrounded.
And, of course, the media couldn't care less, except for this media that you're listening to now, whether four homeless people get harassed by the police repeatedly, even though the cost of doing this in terms of the amount of police energy being spent to come back, what is it, three or four times to harass four people for doing something that they can't, you know, avoid doing, and also something that really nobody is concerned about, sleeping at night and not causing a trouble. And they're actually, this is a very clean group. They're taking care of any elimination waste problems. They're not leaving any litter. They're well behaved and they're actually asking reasonable questions of the police officers. This is the same police department that is that today spent overtime on a second sergeant downtown to patrol Pacific Avenue. Again, from my perspective, largely at the behest of merchants who want to intimidate away visibly poor and counterculture people from the street, from Pacific Avenue. And so apparently it's okay for the Downtown Association and Mayor Cynthia Matthews and her clique at the council to push for this kind of huge expenditure of money. Police overtime is expensive. That's what one sergeant was operating on. He told me there were two sergeants. Sergeant Bush was on duty, as was another sergeant, whose name he told me, but I forgot. The regular sergeant, getting extra overtime pay, and it's really hypocritical and disingenuous, and I think wasteful for the city council and Rutkin, who's the big partisan of the police department, and as I said, really a leading voice on the city council, and now the vice mayor, to claim that the police budget is so vitally important that they need to keep pumping money into this kind of thing while cutting back community programs like the Beach Flats Community Center.
We know you're going to sleep, and we're going to stop you, see?
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
You ain't going to get away with sleeping on that watch.
Dodge started stuff that might be questionable. Just a couple of knives.
Here we are. It's about 5:25. All the bedding has been picked up and is in a nice bundle over by the side of the curb, and it's been noted that...
We don't litter. We're very clean homeless people. We know how to squat properly, and that's what we've been doing.
And indeed, there is.
And actually, I've been cleaning up trash ever since this started. Actually, just kind of wandering around, and they come back because while I was sleeping, I guess more drifting in. But yeah, no, we're clean homeless people. We don't litter. We don't cause any problems. Mm-hmm. We would have been gone before this establishment was open for business, which would not have prevented anybody from getting to where they were going. And no one would have had to see the eyesore. Who was up at 5:25? Is that what you said?
It's now 5:25.
Yeah, 5:25 in the morning. There's no one in downtown Santa Cruz.
Nothing
McDonald's
is open.
Employees. That's it.
Nothing is open.
McDonald's
open
is like
exactly. Like I explained to the cop, we're not disturbing any business friends. We're not disturbing any residents. We're not being vandalous in any sort of sense. We're just sleeping.
We're sleeping.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, nobody made a questionable remark toward us. No one made any comment or. As far as I know, the cops haven't told us about anybody making any calls.
The only complaint was from earlier when that guy was a little bit loud and bothering people, which he was bothering me, and I'm protesting here, so I really don't blame the guy for complaining. But
you should definitely write. Boss.
Well, sure, that was much earlier in the evening. Had nothing to do with this recent arrival of the police, and I doubt that they actually got a complaint that you were sleeping. I suspect they noticed it and they wanted to. Make sure you didn't set a bad example to the local homeless, since you're from out of town.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely.
local homeless people, as you notice, don't wish to stand up for their rights. You are given that supreme opportunity. I hope you feel proud of your option.
I do feel proud, actually, because, well, every town that I go into, I want to make sure that I have a safe place to sleep. And there's no place safer than a well-lit street at night. To be honest with you, in an alcove in a doorway can save you a lot of hassle when it's really cold out. It's a simple fact of the matter. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's ridiculous that Santa Cruz can't have homeless sleeping here. When I was squatting in Los Angeles, there were 30 people sleeping outside of a Big Lots parking lot. The employees didn't have a problem with us. They let us sleep there, and we weren't hassled by the cops. But apparently that's because the cops in L.A. have better things to do than the police in Santa Cruz. So
what year was
Santa Cruz? This was a month ago.
Well, Los Angeles has been told by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals they've made a settlement that requires them not to harass people under the sleeping law in Los Angeles, unless provided you're 10 feet from a building and provided you are doing it only at night between the hours, like it's 9 at night and 6:30 in the morning, or 9:30 at night, 6 in the morning, one of the two.
That's ridiculous. I mean, I just think it's ridiculous that we're getting harassed for sleeping on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is it was made well known. There were flyers distributed. There were protests here earlier.
Exactly.
This is a protest. We have a sign.
And if they arrest us, that's our First Amendment. They can't do that.
They can do it, but they shouldn't. They can, but they shouldn't. There's a lot of things that cops can do.
And he's saying that I can't use the First Amendment to get around laws. Well, I mean, the First Amendment was established, you know, for a reason. You can't have all these laws, you know, totally, you know, being oblivious to the First Amendment and state that is truly a law that can be enforced.
Apparently the Constitution only applies to people with houses.
Oh,
so.
Okay. All right, yeah.
I don't know if you know that.
No, apparently. No, you're right. Apparently we're a
even
social
them,
society where you have
they don't get
to
all
work.
The benefit of the Constitution. The wealthy or you are,
yeah,
the more benefits you get.
Society in which
that's
you have to work to get these rights. I mean, apparently, you know.
Police car is taking, the guy's taking a little nap in the squad car up there. So.
Oh, yeah, it's all good.
Someone should warn that police officer that he might get ticketed for camping.
Yeah, he might get ticketed for camping.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yep.
Actually, he's simply sitting there with his lights off, perhaps waiting for an opportunity to chat with you again.
Yeah. I'm more than willing to have another discussion with a police officer.
I love to leave them silent. It's just so fulfilling. Because they have nothing to say. They just don't want to say the wrong thing. And they just, they're screwing themselves over because they're not telling us what we can do. They're just telling us what we can't do. And we're asking specifically what we can do to avoid an incident. And they're not giving us any answer.
I asked
whatsoever.
The police officer, I asked him if he had room in the jail to take us in and book us. Could he just take me in without booking me and let me sleep there? And he went, well, I can't do that. Well, why not? Just take me in the jail. I'll sleep in the jail. You got caught? You know, you gotta.
He's saying that.
Somebody did that recently, like, you know, back east or somewhere. They, like. And eventually they told him to leave and he wouldn't leave and then they put him in jail.
There you go. So he won either way.
Yeah.
Either
yeah.
No, it's happened to me before. I obviously it's not gonna work for them because I guess they wanna put us in jail, which doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand the point of ticketing or arresting the homeless because. Especially in our case, because we're transient.
There's no way that we're gonna.
If I don't pay the ticket, it doesn't matter. And if I don't appear in court, it doesn't matter because I'm not gonna be here. And as long as I stay out of the Santa Cruz area until the statute of limitation runs out of the warrant for not appearance in court, which isn't that long.
It can be a number of years. So.
Yeah, it's not that long.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
It may bring you back to Santa Cruz. Though, again, as I say, I don't know that they're actually. Giving out warrants for these kinds of infractions, I think that's just too much trouble. Instead, they simply said they bill you the $300 fine addition.
And if they have a warrant for my arrest, they have to make.
Well, where are they
going to
send
it? They have to. Make it known that there was a warrant released for my arrest.
And they can't
because
make that known.
They can't make that known because I don't have an address and I'm not here. So.
So technically, they cannot arrest us on a warrant that we had no warning of.
Well, it won't be a warrant, as I said. It'll be simply some kind of based upon the ID you've given them. That ID will be fined a certain amount of money if it's not paid within a certain amount of time. An additional fine
so
is added.
Your license recently?
And when you try to get your license renewed, or when you try to rent a place, or when you try to, you know, engage in bundle a few securities for a little stock market activity, you will not be. You'll be penalized for those kinds of activities.
Why would the comments you made earlier, if we were to get arrested, we'd be released in 4 hours? Can you tell me your standpoint on that? Like,
well, yeah, they because they don't. What they do is they'll book you into jail, and they'll the jail will process you, which takes 4 or 5 hours. They don't feed you. They just leave you in a large drunk holding tank, and then they fingerprint you, and then they release you with a court date to appear, which is usually. It actually might be quicker. It'd be quicker. You actually get a real court date. Right now, you've got a ticket that does not give you a real court date until you go make it. You have to wait a month for this to appear on this computer, and then you have to go make a court date.
Yeah, going to court to set a court date. Yeah,
it's kind of an abusive procedure.
We're basically going to court right now and to discuss a court date. Like, basically, if we get arrested tonight, it just skips the whole process of us having to go to court to set a court date, then to go back to court again.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And it also costs them money. And you may have to pay for your booking costs, however. They may bill you for your booking costs.
Mm-hmm.
And if they... as they slowly lurk past.
Like sharks.
Yeah. Hey, like sharks in the water.
Well, hey, maybe they can bring by. The coffee. We got the donuts. They bring the coffee.
Yeah.
We all party.
Right?
We all party. Yeah. Coffee and donuts.
You're not doing anything.
We better do than this.
No, yeah. I mean, someone just got stabbed right down, like, 2 blocks away.
Yes,
and this is what they're focusing their attention on. Not finding out what happened with that or trying to stop or prevent any of that activity from going on. But their primary, you know, basis in life is to give us tickets.
Well, they are in private security for us, for the merchants, you understand.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that is the business of Santa Cruz is business.
We're just kind of sitting here.
They're here to serve and protect. I don't see them. Yeah, they're serving us tickets and protecting absolutely nothing.
You think store owners would like it because no one's going to come in and break into a building where a bunch of homeless kids are sleeping out front of. They're going to be like, there's people there. I'm not going to rob that store.
Yeah, dude, I'm a personal security system for this place. It's like if an alarm goes off, I'm gonna know about it.
Well, actually, I had a comment earlier that I thought was really good. What time do you do the municipal buildings close around here?
Well, of course, we're on the weekend, so they're all closed anyway. They won't reopen until Monday.
Okay, so during the weekday, they close, what, around 5?
I would guess, yeah.
So why don't you let the homeless sleep there from 6 until open and then sleep there on the weekends?
Probably for the same reason they don't allow people to sleep in the... Actually, it's illegal to sleep in any of these buildings under the sleeping ban because they're not domiciles.
Oh.
It's only legal to sleep in a house or hotel. So even Borders Bookstore, even if you're a worker, if you fall asleep, that's criminal after the act of 11.
Really?
I mean,
so if the mayor, was working really hard doing whatever it is the mayor does, which probably isn't a whole lot. Sorry about that.
Designing new laws to keep people like you away from the area.
Right. So if he's working really hard and he wants to take a nap at his desk and is obviously technically breaking the municipal code of Santa Cruz, that's cool. Good to know.
Well, I mean, if the cops can break the Constitution...
Armory is an exception?
Our constitutional amendments and...
No, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The armory is... the armory is outside the city limits, I believe.
Right.
But I think the ISSP program is illegal. Most of the ISSP program involves churches, which are not domiciles. Nonetheless, it operates. They don't have any special permits to do that. They've done that, though, for 20 years.
It's the same cop.
It's a police officer, again, arriving to... check us out, perhaps. I better whip out my video camera. Here, you can tape record and I'll video.
Want to switch?
And there's more, but you get the general idea, and I think there's some very interesting dialogue that the campers had, campers, sleepers, protesters, in front of Borders on the 60th anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, showing you how human rights are treated in Santa Cruz for poor and homeless people in the most elementary issue of the right to sleep. I'm going to read now a poem by Julia Vinograd from her book Beside Myself, because this is her birthday. I'm not sure how old she is today, but it is her birthday. She's a poet who I will be having on in a week. She's going to be actually calling in from Berkeley with selections from her new book. And she's a great writer as far as I'm concerned. I can't persuade the library to keep her books because her books are paperbacks, and for some reason they don't want to keep paperbacks. I'm not quite sure what their excuse is, but they don't do it. But here's an example of one of her poems. And she's written thousands, or perhaps, I think probably has been thousands. It's called Street Guy with Tattoos. He's been pacing up and down the block, faded jeans, about 20, jungle parrot hair, orange, blue, green, and almost an angry beak snapping out of his forehead. Say goodbye to any petting fingers.
Every time he strides past, fast, as if he had somewhere to go, his tattoos multiply. The dragon on his shoulders grows two more heads and blows fire. He's been burnt by experts and pays no attention. A screaming naked girl runs down his arm into his fist. He's got as many skulls as freckles from being out too long in the dark. Roses spread red and doom-laden as zits the night before the junior prom. An elegant samurai sword's tattooed on his backbone, but each time he glares at the sidewalk cafe where he can't afford a Java, he measures its windows for rocks. Tattooed wire twisted over his thin ribs will tear your hands. Don't you dare touch. Lines of tanks roll towards each other, shooting just above his belt. He's a one-boy war in a bad mood, sweeping the world, waiting for tattooed gun smoke to fill his empty pack of cigarettes. Doesn't happen. He's everything wrong with the world, made beautiful. The curve of his mouth makes more trouble than a flag. He stalks one block like a cage, sweating history, all our history. He can't get out. We can't get out. That street guy with tattoos by Julia Vinaigrette. That's it for Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. I want to thank you for being with me on this edition. And we're going to go out on the song that we often came in on called Land. And we've got Uncle Dennis coming into the studio next. I'll be back on Sunday. And I also may be doing a cop watch downtown tomorrow at noon, in case anybody's interested. Give me a call at 423-HUFF if you'd like to be a part of it. I haven't decided whether I'm going to do it yet. And the number of calls I get will be the determining factor. It's also a meeting of the Human Rights Organization Saturday, 2 o'clock, at the Taqueria Vallarta at Pacific and Cathcart. Thanks for being with me. Talk to you again on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning. Keep your eyes on the street and let me know at 423-HUFF what's going on. Maybe it's me and you.
Another lie, separation info. And the products of wealth push you along on the far wave of their spiritless undying sense. And you press on God's way to your last dime as he hands you the bill. And you're spinning in the slipstream, tired of some reasoning, paddle right out of the maze. And you paddle right out of the maze.
Open And I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs, where we take a look at music from the 60s and the 70s, including artists like Jethro Tull. And we'll have lots more of that coming up for you. We have the Brew of the Week here in just a little while. And, of course, 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update environmental news for you. And at 10 o'clock, we'll have our album spotlight of the week, where we play an entire hour, one album, one group, whatever it is, we do it for an hour. So stay tuned for all of that right here on Freak Radio 101.1 and www.freakradio.org.